Can we just listen to you talk more about how Lance Leipold is going to put clown suits on people?
That's fine.
I can hear that all day.
You just watch it.
Dude, I'm going to get to watch that at one of my favorite places, two of my favorite places on planet Earth this year, too. Children's Mercy Park and Arrowhead Stadium.
Wasn't Memorial Stadium one of your favorite places on Earth?
I love Memorial Stadium, okay.
We just found out your schedule. You're going to be out of town for every Kansas game.
You probably will be.
That's actually fairly realistic. Yeah. I hope not.
Jake really liked that.
Because it's true.
It's true.
Dude, hey, I'm going to contact MLS offices and make sure that you're
right. There's no chance. Go to homecoming and leave early with Lebo.
When they're playing at Children's Mercy Park, you won't be in town because Sporting won't be here.
That's true.
There's no chance you'll be here in town. Now, there could be a chance. Maybe Sporting is playing a home game, and you get that on a Saturday at Children's Mercy, and then there's a game at and those games are mostly at night. Maybe there's 11 a.m. You could do a double dip in one day. But I'm saying
I don't remember how the schedule worked last year, but I got to go to the BYU game, which was awesome.
It was.
And then I got to go to the Oklahoma game.
Yeah.
And we,
which wasn't quite as awesome. It was rainy and gross. It's great. Yeah, glad that Kansas won for you. Blah blah blah.
That was pretty awesome.
Stuff. But it's
kicking your ass on the way out the door.
Hour and a half freaking rain delay.
We left during
awful.
The rain delay.
It was terrible.
We went and watched it on Mass Street.
It was atrocious.
But I got to go to two games last
awful
year.
Day.
So I'm hoping I would like to go to one at Children's Mercy Park and one at Arrowhead if I can. I want to go to that Colorado game for sure.
Yeah.
I love.
Not exactly sure. It was an ass kicking. Kansas-Oklahoma game.
It was a win.
It was a win.
I just remember which team came out on top.
I've seen some ass kickings in that series, and the scores are different than that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the last one's
the only one that counts.
That's right.
The only one that counts.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true.
Listen here.
Absolutely true. Here.
You're so passive aggressive.
What do you mean?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. He is.
Yeah.
One thing about the Big 12, and then
calculated.
He says another, and you're like, we know what you're doing.
What do you mean?
Very few people know you better than we do. We know what you're doing.
We see the ornery smile on your face.
You know.
Listen, I want the Big 12, to succeed and be great, and I think you can succeed and be a great league. But it's and
you
the other leagues.
Second rate.
The other leagues are going to cannibalize themselves. I mean, they're going to be. Of course, if the SEC
they're going to eat each other.
If the SEC never, if they never go to nine games, it'll be hard to cannibalize themselves when they only have eight games. It is lame.
I'm not right. I shouldn't
listen
be on here today.
You are an SEC boy.
Let's
right?
go. Yes,
it okay. means more.
Isn't you know what? SEC B O I SEC
boy.
Isn't it lame? That it's not my league yet. It will be my league July 1.
Never
isn't
be
it,
your league.
Isn't it
trust
lame?
Me, trust me.
Isn't it lame that they only play eight freaking games
I'd like
in
more.
Football?
I'd
it's
like
embarrassing.
Oh, I'm not
it's
trying,
embarrassing.
You know, at this point, I'm trying to rack up wins.
No, we want to see you guys take on the Citadel.
Listen
you
here.
Know, that's always important.
You don't let Western Carolina roll in and get you in November.
Let's make sure that we get the local schools get their flowers. I mentioned Mizzou. Darius Robinson goes in the first round of Arizona. Ennis Rakestraw Jr. goes
really
in the second
Ennis.
Round to Detroit.
That's what I thought.
Man.
If he
that's
had
a good pick.
Dropped, the Chiefs may
but,
have gone him
But
there.
Detroit getting Terrion Arnold and Ennis Rakestraw and added that secondary. Ooh. Ooh. This infuriated me. Chris Abrams-Drain going in the fifth round to Denver. Man, I thought he'd go in the fourth round. Didn't want him to go to Denver because that's a good pick. Javon Foster, tackle, fourth round to Jacksonville. Tyron Hopper.
Yep.
Then you know what? He battled some injury problems, but
he's
when he was on the field, that was, he was
plays.
A son of a gun. He went in the third round to Green Bay, and Jalen Carley is the safety, goes in the fifth round to the Colts. Cody Trader then signed with the 49ers, and Harrison Meavis. He signed with Carolina or Jacksonville? Look it up.
One
Jake.
Of those.
Look it up, someone. Okay, now, we talked about some prospects from Kansas. Dominic Pooney, the offensive lineman formerly of Central Missouri and then became a star at Kansas, he goes in the third round to the San Francisco 49ers.
I don't like this Niner stuff. Ugh.
Wow.
What a success story.
Oh, amazing.
What an
third
amazing
round,
success
49ers?
Story.
Damn.
If you're a youngster out there and you're thinking about playing offensive line, University of Kansas seems like a great spot to go. And like you were saying about Schrader going to the 49ers, offensive lineman, if San Francisco wants you,
Right.
I mean, that's...
They know what they're doing.
Those are great stories. That's two Division II football players.
Right.
Yeah. Who transferred into Power 5 Division
that's
I schools
right.
who are getting their NFL chance.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Austin Booker, I thought, would go in the third or fourth round. He lasted to the fifth round, but he goes to the Chicago Bears, and there's a spot he has a chance. You know, they loaded up trying to help their offense, but he has a chance to go in there and shine as a pass rusher, so that might not be the worst spot. I know he wanted to go higher, but not a bad spot to go to the Chicago Bears.
Team.
Austin Booker. Then we look at Kansas State. Kansas State local product, repping KCK, Cooper Beebe.
Yep.
He lasted until the third round, but he goes to the Dallas Cowboys.
Yep. Great for him.
And hey, and for, you know what, for all of his family and every place, easy drive down to Dallas, beautiful stadium, and so good for Cooper Beebe. Somewhere I heard Stan Weber screaming
yes.
and crying tears of joy when Cooper Beebe went to the Dallas Cowboys, because those are two things he loves, Cooper Beebe and the Dallas Cowboys.
So near and
congratulations
near
to Stan Weber. We talked a lot about Ben Sennett.
He's one of the best
and
stories as well.
We thought maybe, well, this is what I thought. I thought if the Chiefs want him, they're going to have to draft him in the second round because I don't think he'll be around for their third round pick. And this is before they made and traded their, you know, out of the third round. But Ben Sennett goes higher than I thought. And I love the pick for Washington to give their young quarterback a weapon at tight end. He goes in the second round, Ben Sennett to the Commanders.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
He's a wonderful story, too. It's a typical K-State story. Walk on, undersized, plays himself into being a bigger, stronger, faster player, and he's getting picked that early in the NFL. It's a great story. Absolutely great story.
And then KT Leviston, guard,
he's
goes
late, right?
to the Rams in round 7.
Yeah.
So gets drafted.
Stuff. And a lot of these, and there's, like you said, there's some free agents and stuff like that who
right.
are going to get their chances. The Chiefs rookie minicamp is this weekend. They call that the old gong show, as Herm would call it. But you can go from the gong show to the team. I mean, you have a chance to come in. The Chiefs will have a bunch of rookies in here, and they have to have – this is one of my favorites. You see who was invited to be a quarterback at the Chiefs camp? Spencer Sanders.
Oh, the kid, the Oklahoma State, former Oklahoma State.
And he's like 29 years old.
But he went – where did he go? He hardly played.
Somewhere else. I mean, he's been a couple of schools, but he's going to be here.
Someone's got to throw passes.
Someone's got to throw passes to Xavier Worthy. That's got to happen, and they're not bringing Patrick Mahomes in to do that. So they'll have – these young quarterbacks in here doing that. I'm sure Chris Oladokun will be here and doing that. But they got to have some guys do it. And this is a chance for you to go – you know, jump out on tape. And if you jump out on tape at this, maybe you can get an invite to come to the real camp in St. Joseph in July and August, and that's when you really get a chance to impress these coaches. So it'll be a fun weekend for these guys to get out there and on the field. It's their first chance to kind of get indoctrinated into the playbook and be here, because they only drafted a certain number of players, but you have to have – some semblance of a practice.
I was going to read this for Jake, so hopefully he's listening. He may have taken a break because he's tired of listening to us. But Eric Galco, who is the director of football ops and player personnel for the Shrine Bowl.
Galco.
Very good follow on Twitter if you're looking at NFL draft prospects. This is what he tweeted out about one of the UDFAs that the Chiefs signed. The Chiefs landed one of the most surprising undrafted free agents and one of the highest upside linebackers in the draft in Curtis Jacobs. Penn State has long been a linebacker factory, and Jacobs is an elite athlete with positional versatility and range for the Chiefs' defense. And before the draft, Galco had this write-up about Jacobs, saying that he's a three-year starter at one of the best NFL linebacking development schools in the country, an elite athlete, not talked about enough, played a variety of positions. Jake, this is for you, so I'm reading this about one of the UDFAs. Hopefully you're listening to it.
Galco.
Curtis Jacobs. And so he played a variety of positions at Penn State, far from more outside linebacker and even in the slot in 2021 to both strong and weak side linebacker in the past couple of years. Tremendous athleticism and range. At the Shrine Bowl, he was the fastest linebacker for Zebra Sports. Only linebacker at the combine to run a sub 4.6 at over 240 pounds. Over the last five combines, only seven linebackers did that. Three went in round one. Two others went in the top 100. Showed range, twitch, reaction, and burst to the ball all week in practice. Hard to find athletes like Jacobs at over 240 pounds that can play multiple positions. Whatever team gets him, will have a contributor at special teams, especially the new kickoff rules, and a good chance to develop into a starter. And Eric Galco, who runs the Shrine Bowl, says he was one of the most surprising guys that fell out of the draft, and he highlighted Curtis Jacobs going to the Chiefs. And so if you're looking for a UDFA to keep your eyes on, that was a sparkling write-up by the Shrine Bowl about Curtis Jacobs, so we like that one. Also, another one that Charles Goldman wrote about, he said one of the more fascinating prospects, the UDFAs that the Chiefs signed out of Alabama. Yeah, here we go. Iabi Oki-Anoma, a former top five recruit out of high school. Charlotte edge rusher. He bounced around a lot during his college career. Didn't produce the way he was expected to out of high school. But he, a former Alabama blue chip recruit, played at Bama, UT Martin, and Michigan before finishing his career at Charlotte. I mean, free agency. But tremendous tools. He played with our guy down at Charlotte, Biff. Remember Biff Pogge? He was all pissed off at Media Day because nobody asked him any questions about Charlotte football. Were you around here, Jake? Oh, that was good. He's fantastic. He was at Michigan, and so he followed him from Michigan. And so that's another guy that people are excited about. He's 6'4 and a half, 262, a prototypical Steve Spagnuolo edge rusher that has tremendous talent. But there's questions whether he'll be able to fall in line and be coachable in the NFL after bouncing around to four schools. But, again, for an undrafted free agent, you bet on the talent. And he was a higher blue-chip recruit than Micah Parsons in his class. And so, you know, and these teams kept giving him, you know, Michigan, Alabama, all these schools tried to untap the potential, couldn't get it done, but that's...
Well, it's time to grow up now. That's what happens. You know? You get here, and I think the Chiefs' culture is fantastic for all varieties of players, whether you're an undrafted free agent or you're a first-round draft pick. They have shown consistently over the years that they're going to play whoever deserves to play with how they practice, how they perform, how they go through meetings, and all that stuff. That's what they do. Your fifth-round pick, a seventh-round pick, whatever. Isaiah Pacheco took away Clyde Edwards-Helaire's job his rookie year, basically. And this was a guy who they picked late, but he impressed them, and they're like, well, you're going to play. We've seen time after time fantastic, low-drafted defensive backs get on the field and play. That's what they do. You'll play.
You watch some Big 12 football this stands out to you at all. Another undrafted free agent that the Chiefs signed, and according to Aaron Wilson, gave him $210,000 in guaranteed money. That's a lot for a running back, UDFA. He tested very poorly for his size at the scouting combine, but was productive. Now, here's the opposite of the kid I was just talking about out of Charlotte, the bouncer from Michigan and Alabama. He did not test well, but he was productive on the field. TCU running back Emoni Bailey.
Yeah, he was a player for sure. I mean, TCU had a lot of good offensive players. They had the tight end who the Chiefs picked. They have had really good skill position players the past, I don't know, 10 years or so. More and more of them, like first-round wide receivers and running backs and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's sometimes these guys just don't test well.
Right.
And then here's the deal. You come here and if you're not good, you're gone. If you're good, you get a chance.
So listen to this, Jacob and Nate. He was just one of just eight running backs in power conferences who rushed for over 1,200 yards. He had 25 catches with no drops last year. He had nine scrimmage touchdowns, averaged 3.7 yards after contact, 470 missed tackles. And so it's easy to see why the Chiefs are taking a flyer on him as an undrafted free agent. There's one highlight here that shows him hitting a max speed of 20.3 miles per hour on a 32-yard touchdown. But then you look at his relative athletic score, poor across the board. The 40-yard dash was not good. He did not test well. He improved in his pro day, but still tested so poorly right out of the draft. But then you look, tremendously productive at TCU.
Yeah.
Why not take a shot on him at running back, right?
Well, that's the thing. You got this rookie minicamp, and you need players. Bring him in here and see. The idea for these guys this weekend is to impress enough to come to St. Joe. You get to St. Joe. And this is not some easy roster to make.
Right.
This is the two-time defending Super Bowl champions who have not lost a ton of talent off this. There's some spots where some guys are gone because they couldn't keep everybody. You know, obviously, linebacker with Willie Gay. I think there's going to be some good competition there. If you're an undrafted free agent and you get to come to the Chiefs on that front, you're like, all right, you know, maybe there's some spots there because they don't carry 15 running backs, okay? There's some places there. But the Chiefs have absolutely shown if you can come in here and make this team, they'll play you. They'll say goodbye to someone else. And that's the key to what their culture is all about.
To me, there's two types of flyers that you talked about. You've got the kid who's got all the athleticism in the world, but it doesn't match the production. You know, the production doesn't match the athleticism when you watch him in college. And then there's the kid that doesn't have the measurables, but his production is great. And so maybe he's just not athletic enough, and he's not going to be able to explode through the holes quickly enough in the NFL because they don't last quite as long. Or maybe his measurables don't describe what type of player he is. Some guys, because of their vision and anticipation and ability to make people miss or to break tackles or to play in pads, is better than what their measurables say. He actually could be a real value. You know, and I remember we talked to Herm all the time in the old Carl Peterson line about not getting excited about guys running around in their underwear.
What?
I would rather have the guy that showed he could produce than the guy who had no college production whatsoever but has all the measurables in the world. You know, and so we'll see. I mean, but if you're
never
producing
get excited about guys running around in their underwear.
But if you're producing at a place like TCU, it's a good school, it's a good program, but it's not like, oh, he's running behind Alabama's offensive line. No wonder he's putting up numbers. It's intriguing.
I mean, that's kind of what Pacheco was.
Yeah.
You know, Pacheco didn't have like 5.5 yards a carry or something like that, but he wasn't playing behind an NFL line, and he was in a league that was tough league.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's a chance. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and think that one of these guys who's going to be here this weekend is going to make the team and be a star.
He might.
But it's a chance.
It happens.
It absolutely
happens. Andy Reid's the one that loves to point out the fact that there are more undrafted free agents in the NFL than first through third round picks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there's a limited number of first through third round picks, but it does go to show you that this concept of everybody knowing who the stars are going to be is not true. And I remember asking Andy Reid about that. Why do you think that is? And he said, well, the undrafted free agent doesn't spend a single second in the NFL thinking that they've got a job sewn up. You know, sometimes when you're a first round pick, you kind of think that, hey, I'm on the team.
Yep.
And
the Chiefs have done a great, great job over all of these years of drafting guys with chips on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's a first round pick has a chip on his shoulder sometimes. Sometimes, obviously, it's like a seventh round pick or something has a chip on their shoulder. Or sometimes it's an undrafted free agent has a chip on their shoulder. And I think that's been one of the major parts of what they've been able to do is have the chip on the shoulder, and they all kind of have that in common. I mean, Patrick Mahomes still has a chip on his shoulder.
Another guy that people expect to go in the sixth or seventh round, you want to keep your eyes on, Florida State defensive tackle Fabian Lovett, who Google him and look at some of his highlights, has a chance to stick maybe as a guy who's a run-stopping defensive tackle. Running back Carson Steele is another undrafted free agent that had people excited because of his really because of his hair. Have you seen him?
No. What's it look like? Good?
Jake would love it.
Long hair?
There's a Holly Rowe interview now. Let me see.
I said that looks like Holly.
This guy.
Oh, there you go. What's up, sunshine?
Zag is here, Jake.
Ready? He looks like he's ready to go hang 10.
He's got gray hair.
Yeah. And also, they gave $150,000 to defensive back Christian Roland Wallace. So there'll be some interesting names for you to keep your eyes on. There's also going to be an interesting coach for you to keep your eyes on that I can't say anything about yet, a rookie minicamp. So.
Oh.
Although I just kind of said something, but whatever. Can't say nothing. Can I?
New addition to the Chiefs coaching staff?
No, they bring in, you know, just, hey, just like they bring in some undrafted free agents, take a look at it. They bring in some guys that are looking to get into coaching to help coach.
Ah. Write it down on a piece of paper.
Should I say anything, Jake, or not? No?
Yeah, you should.
I should say who it is?
Yeah, or at least write it down and tell these two guys.
Okay. Well, whatever.
Write it down. And then
Carson Steele's the guy that has the alligator, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Do you like that?
The guy's an alligator?
No, he owns an alligator.
Yeah. All right. That's silly.
Well, I mean,
this is really silly.
I mean, why is that silly?
Because it's a freaking alligator.
Alligators are not pets.
I know.
Says you.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you had found a little alligator wandering around the Kauffman Stadium parking lot back in the day, you would have taken it home.
Yeah, you would have.
And named it Desi.
No.
Carson Steele had over 1,500 yards for Ball State in 2020 before he transferred to UCLA.
Dude, there are so many of these guys, and this is going to get like this even more and more now, who came from smaller schools. We mentioned a couple of those, you know, the Missouri and Kansas that were D2 schools. There were some first-round picks and stuff who were MAC schools or whatever who ended up being at Florida State or UCLA or whatever, as they've transferred through and they've gotten to play against better competition, and then they get picked higher in the draft. It's going to be like that forever now. You'll see these guys roll through there.
Well, and they're saying his position, Andy Reid might reinstate a fullback for him.
Yeah. We've been trying to get a fullback back on this roster.
Sherm's going to love that.
I've been fighting for Sherm's position to come back.
So if he was to make this team, that might be the role.
Did you write this name down yet? Show it to me. Text us or something. Oh,
are you not supposed to?
Interesting. No, but that's
he
not.
Told me not to say it.
Well, don't say it.
Well, then yeah, don't say that.
Well, I didn't.
Yeah,
you didn't.
Good. I'm glad you didn't listen to me. I just said yeah.
Because Jake's answer is always yes.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? Yes.
Yeah. Wait,
let's go. Yes.
Yep.
Man, are you sure about
I'm
this?
A yes man.
That's right. He always has been.
Who's your Chiefs?
Got him some trouble.
Who's your favorite pick for the Chiefs?
Kingsley. So Mateo. Yeah.
Yes.
That's my favorite one.
Yes. Yeah, because, again, Jesse Newell had him mocked when we had him on Thursday. Had him in the first round.
Yeah.
And, again, if they would have picked him in the first round, I would have said, okay, here we go.
And good I love pick, the attitude need, and yes. all that stuff. And listen, I'm
and a, I like the other guys. But I mean, just the value and everything else.
Of Worthy as well, because I think he's going to help the offense. But, like, the spirit and the attitude about a guy from what I – you know, encountered on the Zooms and all this stuff. The first two picks, I think, are really good. But here's what I know. Like, 4 years ago, did anyone go, you know what, I'll bet this, what's his name? Whatever, Sneed? I'll bet he's going to be really good. And you get picked in the fourth round. No. So there's probably someone who's a fourth or fifth round pick. Who's
Jared Wiley.
There's one of these dudes is going to be like,
maybe both of them.
Holy crap. Look at this dude and where they got him. Because that has happened nearly every year for the Chiefs.
I'm most excited about Worthy. I love the offensive lineman, but
what you're going to see on the field, you're talking about.
This Chiefs team won the Super Bowl this year. It was great. But it's so much more fun to watch Patrick Mahomes when he has weapons that can fly.
Or it's a lot of fun to watch when he has time.
And it helps 100%. 100%.
All helps.
But
that, if they got like a top shelf left tackle here.
Yeah. I'm excited about both. But
by the way, they've won three Super Bowls without a top chef left tackle. Trying. Correct.
I know, but I mean, just imagine. Well, they won it without a guy with the great speed.
But when they,
I wasn't crazy
about Worthy. The team that was the
most
exciting to watch to me was the team that had guys that could fly.
Yeah.
And Mahomes could throw it to all of them. You know, and just so I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. I think it's a fine pick, right? And when they picked him, it was like, okay. But he was like in the next tier of wide receivers where there's about four or five guys that you're like, yeah, Ladd McConkey, if it ended up with him, yeah.
I'd
like,
be more excited for Xavier Worthy than Ladd McConkey.
Okay, yeah, I'm just saying that they're on that tier.
Sure.
Right? They're the top three or four guys that went before him. Like, if they would have traded up for Thomas from LSU, would have been pumped about that because I think he was the last guy on that next tier. But the fact that the Bills traded for that pick, like, I'm all in on Worthy.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
solid.
All in.
Yeah, yeah, what about Phillip Brooks out of K-State signing as an undrafted free agent with the Chiefs?
All right, listen, that's it. They are the return game is going to be a bigger deal now because of the new rules and stuff like that. And he's been one of those guys who can do that as well. Another chance. It's a chance for a guy. You know what I mean? Any one of these guys.
Local product.
Yeah. It's, you know, this is no matter what they say, Andy Reid will say this like when we talk to him next Monday. They're going to take pictures. They got the uniform on. You know, you're a chief. Maybe only for 3 days or whatever, but it's fun.
Hey, there's some people in this town that have made a life out of being at a summer camp.
For sure. I remember when my wife used to watch The Bachelor, and then like he would say, oh, this guy is an NFL player, and I would get on the Google. Yeah. I said, not exactly.
If I got to go practice with the Chiefs for 2 days, I'd be telling everybody for the rest of my life.
MVP with the Chiefs.
I'd tell everybody about that the rest of my life.
And you are.
Can't ever take it away from me,
buddy.
Can't
take it away.
Let's take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati. Now joined by Scott Carroll. You'll always rep Liberty no matter where you live.
L-Town.
That's right. Also rep Liberty traffic, which causes me to curse many.
It gets worse and worse every day.
Doesn't it? And, of course, former Major League pitcher, but also played football at a high level. And so might we get your thoughts on the draft? The draft weekend was big, right? And the Chiefs went out. And they added speed in the first round. Then maybe they get their left tackle of the future in the second round. And maybe they get their tight end of the future in the fourth round. And so it was an interesting draft, but it feels pretty damn good that they checked a lot of the boxes they needed. Anything that stood out to you that had you fired up about the draft?
Yeah, very fired up. I know everyone's waiting for my opinion, but no, this is awesome. No, it's awesome. Two-time Super Bowl champs, defending, getting the things that they needed with the speed, and super excited about the left tackle that they draft in the second round. That's where I got really jazzed up, because protecting Mahomes for the next 7 years would be incredible.
Yeah, and so the great thing about it was, and look, mock drafts, guess what, people? They're wrong a lot.
Right.
It's just you know, people doing their best to compile information and guess at where guys are going. Right? Because not only are you guessing what teams really think, but you have no idea how the board's going to fall. It's all this guesswork.
As soon as
right?
Penix gets traded, like the Falcons right. get Penix, everything goes mayhem. So it doesn't mock drafts don't mean anything.
Don't get me started on that again. When we have Jesse Newell, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, and he just doesn't throw darts. He works hard on his mock drafts to be able to talk to the people he knows within the organization and get good information from the people he talks to. When he's in here on Thursday, and in his mock draft, he has the kid going to the Chiefs in the first round. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm set for this. He was there. And, you know, when they moved up, I thought maybe they're moving up for this BYU left tackle that Jesse was talking about. It makes sense. And that's the guy they want. And Andy loves him, BYU. Let's see, okay. Xavier Worthy, fine. That's great. Well, see, maybe left tackle, maybe Donovan Smith come back. Who knows? To have him fall to the next round, and then they land the left tackle that I conditioned myself to look for in the first round. I'm thinking, and guess what? Maybe we're all wrong, but that kicked ass. That kicked ass. So it's not like they had it. Well, we're going to go with speed and say goodbye and not worry about left tackle. They got them both, and they didn't have to give up a whole lot for it. That was the beauty of it. And so you can sit here and say with a straight face, they got two guys who on Thursday we thought were possibilities in the first round. And they got them both at the two positions they needed most. So, off my soapbox.
It's we've made a lot of comparisons to the Patriots dynasty and how frustrating it was for everybody else in the league to watch the Patriots do their thing year after year, and how frustrating it was to watch them. Like, how did we let Randy Moss get to the Patriots? Like, how did the league let that happen? You know, or like, you know, Corey Dillon, you know, it'd be like a player that, why are these other teams allowing Bill Belichick to have this? And that's what it feels like is happening right now for the Chiefs. Like, how many people did you see over the weekend who are fans of other teams going
mad?
How in the world could the Bills trade with the Chiefs again? I don't remember who the guy was that you retweeted, Stephen, that was arguing that the Bills have somehow won all of these deals.
Right. Luke Russert from MSNBC. Yeah. Hey, by the way, the Bills won the Mahomes trade. That's certainly a one way of looking at it.
And I thought it was like, at first when I saw it, I thought, this is like he's playing with us. And then he like had a whole thread where he tried to literally argue that had happened.
And I loved his dad, Tim Russert.
Yeah.
Great. And so I followed, but the diehard Bills fan. But there's a point where it's like, come on. You know,
Fred, even Bills fans are like,
right.
Come on,
you
man.
You really think you'd still do that again?
Three Super Bowls versus zero.
You can explain why it happened, but to say they won it is like the most.
The only way you ask that is this. If you really think they won it, would you do it again? And there's no way in hell any Buffalo fan would do it again.
Right.
They would not put Mahomes in Kansas City again.
Right.
Why would you?
You understand, we didn't all know that Mahomes was going to be this.
Yeah.
You can understand, you can justify why they did it when they did it, but like you said, so just to like watch that, okay, the league is now going to allow, what are the two things, we spent the whole run-up to the draft saying that what the Chiefs need is an explosive wide receiver and a left tackle that they can rely on for the next few years.
Okay. All right.
And then we were like, and literally all we kept talking about was that's all they really need. Like, mm-hmm. And they don't even really need it, but that's what they could use the most. But they already have a Super Bowl roster. And then the league went out and, like, the two teams, if there are two teams that have been victims of this Chiefs,
right.
are the 49ers and the Bills. And they... Yeah. They helped the Chiefs get what they needed. So
thank you. That's all.
It's
Scott Carroll is in studio. So while this is all happening, the Royals, man, they get the first win in Detroit. Then they lose the last two games. That second game was that was the gut punch.
Right.
That was a tough one. And that's the first time, well, I don't want to say the first time, but then we haven't seen too many people critical of Matt Quatrero. I mean, you really couldn't. Last year, because what did he have? He didn't have much to work with. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But now when you have more weapons, you can evaluate a manager. Now we can start to see how does he handle the staff? How does he handle the bullpen? And so people were kind of questioning some of the moves there. Gut punch, but they lose the series 2 out of 3. Any takeaways you had from the weekend series against Detroit?
Yeah, so Lugo's performance was incredible.
Yes.
What he went out there and just dominated was really fun to watch. He continues to just be very consistent and cool, calm, and collective, and throwing all of his pitches for strikes. He's really fun to watch. I love the way they battle back, though, that game, even though they lost the game that, like you're talking about, the gut punch, that second game of the series. Battle back, had a really, really good chance to tie it up or possibly even take the lead. But, you know, that is one that kind of swung the series a little bit. And I think, you know, just moving forward, I think even Waka himself wants to see himself just be a little bit more consistent and kind of execute at a higher level so he can give them a really good chance to win.
And in looking at that game, the game two, they lost 6-5. Singer goes 5 innings but walks 3, 93 pitches in his 5 innings. Man, you'd love to see him get through 6 or 7. Couldn't do it. But the question was, I mentioned that they were, you know, you had people questioning Quatrero. Zerpa comes in relief of Singer. 1 inning, 9 pitches, boom, right? Takes him out, goes to Stratton, and then Stratton gets absolutely blown up. And it wasn't heavy criticism. It was like something he said, hey, Zerper was on, and he nine pitches. There's something to be said for just, hey, let's go ahead and let him go back out there and see if we can get another inning out of him. He looked good, right? Only nine pitches. Anything to that? I mean, we're still trying to figure out the way he likes. Clearly, he loves Stratton, and there are guys that he's going to lean on. You know, Schreiber has been very, very good. We've seen how good McCarthy's been. He's still willing to trust Will Smith, but Stratton is a guy he wants to lean on. But, man, Zerpa looks so good in his one inning and nine pitches. Maybe put him back out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think a lot of people will kind of look at that and pinpoint that. There's so much data and analytics they're looking at, too, with just who's coming up next in the next half of the inning, what they're, you know, whether lefties, righties, to try and get the best matchups. And Stratton had been throwing the ball well. I know that was, you know, really bad inning, but overall been throwing the ball pretty well. And I think sometimes with the feel of the game, going back to keeping Zerpa in, if he's, like you're saying, if he's dialed in and just nine pitches, I personally would like to see managers and pitching coaches be like, yeah, let's send him back out there.
Yeah.
They are relief pitchers. You know, they're used to coming in with people on base anyway, so let them go back out there and just give you some more quality innings and face one or two more batters and then bring another reliever in if it's not going so well.
So, like, I mean, you were a starter, but let's when you were playing and maybe you were on that line of the pitch count you wanted to get to or that you'd see a manager come out and with the catcher and discuss things, how much input would you have in whether or not you'd stay in the game or they'd ask you how you'd feel? It feels like there's more reliance now on analytics than there was when you were playing. But what were those conversations like? I'm always curious of what they're talking about and how much they actually do depend on the opinion of the guy that's throwing the ball.
That's a good question. I think at me being the first few years of my career, they didn't really care for my opinions
right.
So much because you're being a rookie and they're just like, you're going to do what we tell you to do type of thing. But as you kind of get more tenured in the league, I think they rely on your opinion a little bit. They're going to ask you how you're feeling deeper in the game, really talk about the next few hitters coming up to bat so you can really try and execute and be successful in those last few pitches and last few outs that are needed. But they're going to sometimes they're just going to come up to you and say, hey, we got so-and-so coming in. It's a much better matchup. And so just, you know, heck of a job today or whatever the situation is. And so we're going to go to the next guy.
Were there times when you just get pissed off like, oh.
Yeah, there's a few times you're like, man, I'm feeling great. Let me keep going. And but just whether it be like the pitch count's too high or just the matchup situation coming up is more beneficial for the relievers that they got coming in.
What about the opposite though? Like you mentioned, as a young pitcher, first year or two, were the times that maybe you didn't feel great, but guess what? You don't want to say anything because you want to stay out there and you want to keep your job, right?
Yeah.
And you still want to like, I feel great. I'm
yep.
fine.
Yep, absolutely. So that competitor in you definitely want to keep pitching, and you know you got to keep the momentum going as far as yourself saying I want to keep competing on the mound and giving myself an opportunity to still showcase my skills and show these coaches and team that you're going to go out there and compete and not just give up the ball because you're not feeling great.
It feels like we're going to see some really good competitive battles between the Royals and the Tigers as this evolves. And who knows? I mean, Cleveland's going to be a factor, but maybe Detroit and Kansas City, they've arrived and they're going to be a factor all season long. When you watch the two teams, do you get a feel for who's got more talent, pretty damn even? Like, how do you feel about how these two teams match up?
Yeah, I think what you brought up there, like just the competition, the competitive, that's what stood out to me the most so far this season. It's like they play in a lot of close games, the Royals do, but it's because they're a good ball club. I think they're going to play in a lot of tight games. They're going to pitch it pretty well. They're going to play really good defense, and the bats will be alive in certain instances. So I think this division, honestly, is going to come down to a few games, and I think the competition between what we're seeing between the Tigers and the Royals right now is very close. That second game, they very easily could have won it, that bad inning, but overall, I think we're going to see a lot of close games.
And by the way, I know we've all been focused on the draft and everything else. You all see who woke up, right, in the division. Have you been paying attention to Minnesota?
They won seven in a row?
Yeah. And so now it's like,
yeah,
that was the team people were picking, and mm-hmm. then they got off to a terrible start.
Injuries.
And we kind of forgot about them. And then all of a sudden, they won seven in a row. And so now they're only 4.5 back of Cleveland. They're only two games behind Kansas City. Chicago, I feel pretty comfortable. They're not going to
they're not waking up.
Thrust themselves back into the conversation. But, I mean, we might end up seeing just a good old-fashioned four-team race. It could be wild the whole summer and just never sort itself out. That's what I'm hoping for, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to see the division just beat itself up, you know, and it's going to be, you know, if you can be 500 in your division or right around there, then you have a really good shot to advance in a wild card.
We'll take a quick break. Jake has some bets he wants to make, and we'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, one interesting note on the game tonight for the Royals against the Toronto Blue Jays. Jonathan Bolin is scheduled to start tonight's game. He came up and joined the Royals prior to the series finale against Detroit. He will fill Alec Marsh's spot in the rotation for at least one turn. And that was super disappointing, Scott, as we have Scott Carroll in the studio. Marsh sustained a right elbow contusion and landed on the IL after he was hit by a comebacker 91-mile-an-hour fastball on Wednesday. He's been so good. You hate to see that for a young pitcher, but I was going to ask you about that. You know, the first fear is when you get hit with a line drive, oh, no, something broke.
Yeah.
X-rays were good. Nothing broke. But then the next day, there was so much swelling and the contusion, they said, hey, because of where it was, put him on the IL, let that calm down. Yeah, what's the concerns there that we should have about him? Thankfully, nothing broke there, but they want to err on the side of caution. He's a young pitcher. He's been doing well. You come back and you're dealing with something like that. Maybe what are some of the things that he might have to face getting back from that?
Good question. So that exact same thing has happened to me in my pitching arm. So it doesn't good. Just a comebacker right on the.
Who hit it? Do you remember?
It was in Double A. I didn't remember. It was towards the end of the season, but it doesn't feel good. But they took the proper steps. The Royals did, number one. So putting him on the IL, just getting him some time to recover, because you're going to have a lot of swelling and just bruising probably that just needs to heal. But I did hear. Watching the game yesterday, Alex says he feels great throwing the ball and he would be ready to pitch, you know, if they needed him to, but they're going to give him the enough time. So that's good. So just now it's just more about just getting all of that inflammation out of the arm and feeling consistent to throw the ball every day. And that 15 days will give him plenty of time. So we'll be seeing him again soon.
And they get to take a look at Bolin. He's 27 years old, made his MLB debut as an opener back on September 27th, pitching relief. 2 days later, they stretched him out as a starter in the minors. And so he went 3-1 with a 2.57 ERA and four starts with Triple-A Omaha this season. And that is one thing that some people have questioned, rightly so, about the team. Yes, the rotation looks good, but what about the depth of the rotation? Now, they're not going to need 32 starting pitchers like they did last year, but you're going to need some for situations like this. And so this is a big spot to see what they've got here and if he can contribute, because this won't be the only time they'll call upon him if he's successful tonight.
Absolutely. Great point. I think what I wanted to add, too, is that when you come up and you're in a position like this, when you're being asked to be a spot starter or fill in for a little bit of time, and you're coming up to a winning ball club, it's just a different feeling. And the team around you is like, the energy's different. You're not coming up just to fill a spot. I'm like, oh, God, can we get through this, make it to the end of the season? Like, no, you're coming up to compete, give us a chance to win, because these wins will really matter as we move forward. And it's just a different energy. And the pitcher himself will know that, but also the team will provide the energy like, hey, let's be behind this guy and get after it.
And he was a second-round pick in the 2018 draft out of Memphis, Nate Buchady. So he does have some pedigree. It'd be nice to see him establish himself at least as quality depth for the starting rotation.
I think it's like another chance, too, to see what this pitching lab and the new coach, the coaching staff around the pitching department in Kansas City can provide. You know, I mean, it's just only one player, so I'm not going to judge the whole project on one outing or anything like that. But
it would be harsh if you did.
Yeah, it would be harsh, right? But I mean, I think that's still very much a work in progress, because I just remember going down. I got to go spend one day at training camp, spring training last year, and you know, JJ took me over and kind of showed me what they were working on with some of the pitching lab stuff and the way they were changing things, and it was a stark difference from what we'd seen in the past from this organization. And the biggest knock on this organization for a long time is the ability to bring guys through the system. And if you want to be able to compete with teams like Cleveland in this division, that's what they've been so good at, right? They know how to develop pitchers. And it doesn't have to be that every guy you develop is a lights-out starter and a number one ace, but can you call, when you dip down into the minor leagues or you go, you know, to bring up a guy to fill in, can he be serviceable even? Can he go out there and keep your team in the game? And like you said, you know, the players are going to be out there thinking we can win a game today. And it's an important game today. And, you know, to me, as opposed to like when you bring up a guy, it's like, well, we got some 4A pitcher I've never heard of before, and we're 20 games under 500. Let's see what he's got. Okay. Totally different. So I don't know. I'm just excited to see, because I don't feel like we really got to see last year what the pitching lab was about. I don't think that was a good indication. They were still trying to implement a lot of things and get players in. I don't know what you think about that, Scott, but I'm excited to kind of see where they can go from here. Can they start to develop some of that depth?
Yeah, you bring up some good points, because this, I mean, that's the thing too with baseball. There's different chapters throughout the whole season. Like, it's such a long season. You know, we're about to end the first month, but we've already seen just several different things that have happened to where you're going to have to dip down and get some depth from the starting rotation in the organization. And so now moving forward, what does this look like for the consistency, and can they do that? So we're going to see a lot of different stories told throughout the year and a lot of different chapters. So, yeah, I'm just like you. I'm excited to see if they can just be consistent and keep this momentum moving forward.
All right, to wrap things up, do we have any movement on the Jake searching for a house front?
Man, we're working through it. We're getting the finances all set up. Yeah. So you guys are still employing him, though, right?
That's yes. Yeah, sure. Yes.
Right?
Right.
Okay. I need to talk to Lebo here real quick.
How long is this background check taken? This is like a four-week
process.
Getting
the finances in order. That seems right. That could be a lengthy process.
Yeah, I'm 51, and I'm still trying to do that.
Trust me. Yep.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, and tell people how they can get a hold of you, my man.
Guys, yeah, I'm on 8700 State Line on the Leawood side. 816-304-4068. Appreciate it.
I need to see you and Jake on a billboard at some point. I think that's
exactly what we need.
Somehow you could connect with the Kansas City people, and that's how to do it. That's our man Scott Carroll in studio with us. Back into this on WHB.